Okay, good morning. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, who are Elizabeth Eckhart, Patrice Creamer, and Roberta Berry, who make up our research team at Social Sciences Innovations Corp in New York City. And I'd like to say that this research was funded by NIMH. So this is a very quick background slide to say that we consider deaf adolescents a vulnerable group. We're talking about American Sign Language users who often subscribe to deafness as a culture. The majority of the adolescents we'll be talking about were born to hearing families. And as far as we can determine, there's no organized or available curriculum for HIV-STI prevention for deaf adolescents. So that's what spurred us to conduct this research. So what are deaf adolescents' prevention needs? Well, we know they have low HIV knowledge and some high-risk behaviors. The reasons for the low knowledge are hypothesized to be a general low fund of health knowledge among deaf people in general, and these deaf teens in particular, low reading levels, lack of access to oral information, that would be from media or within their own families, and little information received in schools. That's based on our own research, which was published in 2010. So this is an SBIR study, which is a Small Business Research Innovations grant, and our specific aims, this is a feasibility study, which developed a computer-based prototype of an HIV-STI prevention curriculum in American Sign Language for deaf students and to meet their cultural, linguistic, and learning needs. Now, we also wanted to do it by adapting it from an already existing evidence-based HIV-STI prevention program. Second aim was to examine the feasibility and acceptability of such a program as a curriculum, to field test it in high schools for the deaf, and to assess its preliminary effectiveness. As we did this, our general approach was first of all to concentrate on what we created being culturally and linguistically appropriate for deaf youth, and to deliver the content through what's called blended or sometimes hybrid learning, which is a combination of web-based and teacher-facilitated delivery. It is actually very much the coming thing in higher ed, college, two-year college training programs, and is just kind of trickling down into high school. Our methods included using what's called the adapted procedure, which was developed by Wingwood and DiClemente. And that's a procedure for taking an effective intervention and adapting it for a new population. And here are the stages. One is to assess the population characteristics. Two, choose the intervention you want. Obtain stakeholder input through theater testing, which I'll explain in a minute, and produce what they call, in their article, draft one, but for our purposes, it was the prototype intervention. So assessing the population characteristics. Well, we had actually done this several years prior to getting this grant, and we based it on this. We surveyed over 700 deaf high school students in the United States in five regions, and we found low HIV knowledge compared to hearing samples, and some high-risk behaviors and others which were typical for adolescents, but that means they need education even if it's not higher in particular. Now, a choice of an effective behavioral intervention, which we settled on a program called Focus on Youth, developed by Bonita Stanton, was, and these are the reasons, there was biological evidence of effectiveness. This is rare for these behavioral interventions. It was very impressive to us. There have been previous adaptations to really diverse cultures, including China, the Bahamas, and Namibia. Three continents, three cultures, diverse languages, diverse races. We thought, well, it's got a good shot at being adaptable to deaf culture too. It was also successfully adapted to schools, although it began for as an after-school program for African-American inner-city U.S. kids, and there were long-term follow-up studies, so we sort of continued to do well. Next was the content selection and translation process. So we had to go through the whole program, and this was kind of difficult because it's a sequential program, but we wanted to test out whether we could do different parts of it. So these are the ones we settled on: the family tree, two skill building exercises, communication styles, and sex, a decision for two. SODA, which is called, you can see, stop options, decisions, action. And that's one of those decision making. Most programs for kids have them. It's what are you thinking before you act? And why are you thinking it? And getting the kids to stop and think. And HIV facts. So now I'll explain, what is that theater testing? Well, some people have said, oh, you mean fishbowl. So that's another name for it. And what it is the intervention is delivered to the population. Let's say you're picturing kids sitting in a classroom in a semicircle, or when you read the adapted article, you have the idea that they're talking about people sitting under a tree somewhere. And the other stakeholders are sitting around the outside. In our case, it was the school, teachers, and administrators. And that was kind of unusual for us. We were used to doing focus groups and interviews and other types of qualitative research. And we got immediate feedback from the students. Did they like that exercise or did they not? And then we had a post-class discussion with the teachers and administrators to see what they thought of what the students thought. And our findings from the theater testing were that this Focus on Youth program gives little detail about a story character. For example, they show a picture of a girl, and they say, this is Emily. Please tell me about her friends. Okay, English speakers kind of fill in the details. Deaf signers expect a lot more information before they're willing to, how do they know? I mean, it's just a different style. So we conclude ASL and English are different languages with different storytelling patterns, and we're going to have to fit the Focus on Youth to the deaf storytelling pattern. So a key exercise, the first one that was listed before, is called the family tree. And its objective is for students to learn to link their own behavior to their family's values. Now, of course, the majority of deaf adolescents are the only deaf person in their family. And often there is no or very little sign language at home. And so they miss an awful lot of the family conversation. They observe the family relationships, but they don't have the information and the context of some of the things that they see going on. So we made our characters deaf teens who miss a lot of the family conversation, and we provided a lot more detail about our characters than the original Focus on Youth. Now, this is an example of part of our program, what we showed, and this is, we did about three or four iterations of this lesson to try to get close to what would work with the deaf kids. This looks like a genogram, but in fact, it's not about who inherits blue eyes. It's about what are the relationships, what is it like to have a parent who gets divorced and remarries and has another child, and your relationship to your half-sibling, and it's all about the relationships. And we think we finally kind of got it for how to present it to the deaf kids. Another adaptation was a role play about communication styles to illustrate passive, assertive, and aggressive communication. In our scenario, it's a deaf student returning a shirt with a hole in it to the school store. So all of the dialogue was in ASL, all the characters are deaf, and the students see the different communication styles in their own social setting. This was introduced on the computer, but played out in real time. And what we did was we gave the student the passive role, the store manager, who's the recipient of the aggressive or the assertive or the passive style of the customer. And that's Patrice Creamer doing the signing the explanation, and that's Roberta Berry playing the student. But we would expect when it when we have this thing developed that it will be the teacher who will play the student role, because that one you have to learn to do. Then, but it was a wonderful exercise. I saw it played out in several different deaf schools, and the kids could have done them all day. It really was meaningful to them, and they got it. For the HIV facts, we decided to see if we just added visuals, bullet points, and a simplified text, if we could use something close to the original. And the results showed that we could. We presented it the way you just saw, and we gave them a 15-item HIV facts pre- and post-test. And we found out a tiny little sample, 16, because we had it in two classes, but it showed that they could use the material, learn it, and gain, you know, a significant amount of knowledge with, you know, PAIR-T tests. So, in conclusion, these are our conclusions. Adaptation needs to be both linguistic and cultural, as we suspected. The core elements and exercises of FOY need to be retained. Theater testing is an effective method of gathering qualitative data from deaf youth, their teachers, and their administrators. Deaf students really respond to these active learning techniques when they're adapted to deaf culture and American Sign Language. And deaf students can learn those vital facts about HIV that they need to protect themselves, which in our, you know, several years ago study of the 700 deaf kids, we found out many of them simply didn't have those facts. Other conclusions were that we had actually demonstrated the feasibility of adaptation of the focus on youth for deaf kids. And for a full deaf focus on youth, the following are needed: realistic stories and vignettes with deaf actors. The kids were really clear. No, we don't want someone to tell us the story in ASL and show us a few pictures. We want to see it. We want to see it with live action and deaf actors. We need more details about the story characters. We give enough details so they can fill in, and not so many that it over, you know, we give them the answers. Of course, deaf kids are in a very different situation than hearing kids. Some of them have grown up with those same kids for the last, 10 years, and they know everything about them already. And in general, those kids are much more willing to share personal things, perhaps, than the hearing kids. So it's a different situation. And we found that blended learning exercises where the target is fixed, like the diagram or the vignette, which will now be filmed, though, you know, that is a really good way of working it, because that way the teacher does not have to keep reinventing and readapting something that was for hearing kids. It's there for them, and they can comfortably lead a discussion with that target up on the screen or being seen on kids' iPads. Current status: we recently received phase two funding to complete it and do the full development, which we are very pleased about. And the new project will adapt the whole focus on youth. It will continue to use the adapted model. We found it very useful. And we will conduct a trial of the focus on youth with 80 kids. Now, this is going to be a quasi-experimental design, because with only two schools, we can't randomize like 22 schools to this or that. So it's what we call a quasi-experimental. But within the schools, we can randomize classrooms. And we'll have enough power to find out if it works. So I thank you very much. And here is some contact information, but you can speak with me after the program if you want more. Thank you.